It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode of the Spanish Football Podcast is sponsored by Beer 52, who this summer are offering you a free case of eight delicious craft beers. Simply go to www.beer52.com/Spain and just cover the £5.95 postage to receive your free case now.
Sydney, how gutted are you that the football season has come to an end?
As you know, Phil, I am incredibly gutted. I'm not sure what to do with myself now.
Well, Sydney, I've got great news that may soften the blow. To start off the summer break, Beer 52 are offering you and our listeners a case of free, new and exclusive beers from Spain.
Free beer? Surely not. And from Spain as well. They clearly know the way to our listeners' hearts. Tell me more.
So, their industry experts curate a new case every month showcasing the very best craft beer and independent breweries from around the world. Included this month is the Oso Brew Company's Fiesta, which is a balanced, refreshing and super drinkable pale ale. The hops bring big citrus and tropical fruit aromas, while the broad malt base brings a full body and rich mouth feel. Potentially one of the best things to come out of Spain since Pep.
Amazing. But I do also like to have a few snacks with my beers. Can they help me out with that as well?
Yeah, so do I, Sydney. And they certainly can. They come with a couple of tasty snacks, as well as the award-winning Ferment magazine, which talks about Spanish brewing.
Sign me up. How do I do it?
So you can get your free case of delicious craft beers from our friends at Beer 52 by simply going to www.beer52.com/Spain and just covering the £5.95 postage to receive your free case now. That's www.beer52.com/Spain. If after that you're unsatisfied, you can simply pause or cancel at any time.
There's only one thing to say to that. Salud!
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. It's the final one of the season because the 22-23 campaign has come to an end. Sydney has just stepped off a plane for the final time, travelling back from a game. Hello Sydney.
Hi Phil, how are you?
I'm okay. I think we're both fraying a little bit. We've been mentioning that we're a bit tired. It's been a tiring season and we're here at the end now, and I won't reveal the contents of our WhatsApp messages this morning, but let's just say that I think Sid's relatively relieved that it's coming to an end this season, because it's been physically challenging, let's put it like that.
I was writing today about how all the people involved in the relegation battle were just kind of desperate for it to end. They were exhausted and empty and just desperate for it to end, and I wrote this as part of, you know, a bigger piece obviously about the final day of the season and the relegation battle and stuff, and then it occurred to me, I thought, have I just basically projected onto them here? Is this more about me than about them?
Sounds very much what you were saying to me at 8 o'clock this morning. But anyway. Here's what happened then on the final day of the season, match day 38. It was split into two. We had five games at 6:30 and five at 9 p.m. The early batch of games saw Real Madrid and Athletic Club draw 1-1 at the Bernabeu in what was Karim Benzema's final game for Real Madrid after 14 seasons, scoring his 354th goal. Yes, he did score on his final game a penalty, which secured a point for Real Madrid. It was enough to earn second place for Los Blancos because Atletico Madrid conceded a 92nd minute equaliser away to Villarreal to draw 2-2. It could be a very costly equaliser that. Well, it is a costly equaliser. It costs Atletico Madrid about sort of anywhere between 7 and 8 million euros, depending on what figure you believe. That's the difference between finishing second and third. So Real Madrid finished second, Atletico Madrid finished third. Osasuna finished seventh. Tremendous effort from Los Rojillos. They beat Girona 2-1, and they're into the Conference League. They're back in Europe for the first time in 16 years. Congratulations to Yagoba Arrasate and his team. Mallorca beating Rayo by 3-0. First time in a decade that Mallorca finished in the top flight, in the top half of the top flight. They're ninth. Tremendous job done by Javier Aguirre as well. Rayo season tailing off as it has done for the last couple of years. And Real Sociedad beating Sevilla by 2-1. Then it was all about the relegation battle at 9 p.m. Six sides could go down, and one did. It was Valladolid, who couldn't get past Getafe. Not easy to get past José Bordalás Getafe when they're in this kind of mode. They needed a point. They got it. Valladolid 0, Getafe 0. Getafe with 20% possession, 25 fouls in the game, and 64 completed passes in the match only. Pretty much as we would have expected. So Getafe stayed up. Valladolid go down. Celta Vigo also stayed up thanks to a 2-1 win against Barcelona. Gary Vega scoring both of the goals and bursting into floods of tears at the end. Emotional for him because saving his hometown club, but also maybe it might be his last game. Elche 1, Cadiz 1. Shout out to Cadiz. We are very happy that Cadiz have stayed in La Liga. Got a real soft spot for them. And I think the league is better for having a club like Cadiz and a city and a fan base like Cadiz in the top flight. So well done to the Yellow Submarine. Espanyol 3, Almeria 3. Absolutely thrilling game. Maybe in hindsight, you should have gone to this one, Sydney, because it was really quite brilliant. But Almeria were down, and then they got an 87th minute penalty, which Adrian Barba stepped up and converted, cool as you like, to save them. That meant that Valladolid needed to win, but they didn't. So Almeria stayed up. Espanyol were already down. And Betis won, Valencia won. Valencia getting the point that they needed to stay up. And another goal from a youngster, Diego Lopez, scoring his third goal in four matches, getting the equaliser. Although it was nervy for Valencia because they conceded after 1 minute. So it was a lot nervier than they thought it might be. But there we go. That's what happened on match day 38. This is the last Monday pod of the season, but we're going to be podding all summer over at patreon.com/TSFP. This week, patrons are getting a Q&A pod on Tuesday, a bonus pod on Friday. Plus, you get access to the TSFP Discord. Come and join us. It's around €4 a month. Sid, I guess we should probably start off by talking about Benzema leaving Real Madrid, but it feels like we've been so immersed in the relegation battle that actually we should probably start there, particularly since you've just got off a plane from Vigo.
Yeah. You're right. It does feel like... I was thinking this today, and tell me what you think about this theory with Benzema. It kind of felt to me like Benzema kind of very quietly became the best player around. It's like we didn't really notice him, and then the next thing we know, he's the Ballon d'Or winner. Now, obviously, I'm overplaying the idea that we didn't notice him, because of course we did, but he wasn't the guy at the top of the conversations about the best players in the world. He wins the Ballon d'Or, and it's almost as if, having got to that point, it was, all right, that'll do, and now he's gone. You know, he's still the current holder of the Ballon d'Or, and he's gone. And it feels kind of strange. It's almost as if that created... That was it. This was all he wanted. He just wanted to get to the point where he was recognised, and now he can go and do something else. A little bit of that. I mean, mate, obviously the real mic drop would have been to have won it and then literally last just year. Gone, that'll do. And this is, of course, what I've been arguing that Messi should have done post-World Cup, the day after the World Cup final, or even the night of the World Cup final, just said, listen, see you later. Benzema's a curious one. We were talking about this a little bit off air, because it does feel like he's a player who's not really had a storyline around him. He's just been really, really, really good at football. I think he has played a better quality of football.
Well, there have been a few.
This is what I'm coming to. Exactly the point. So, you know, it feels like he's just been really good at football. I think in terms of the way that he's played, the subtlety of his game, the technical quality of game, the understanding, the fact that he doesn't seem to play a game that ever means that you think, wow, look how quick he is, look how fast he is, look how spectacular he is. He just gets on with being better at it than anyone else, with, of course, that asterisk, which I always talk about, the except Messi asterisk.
And it's felt like there hasn't been sort of a lot of noise around it. And yet that contrasts with the fact that actually, off the pitch, there's been a huge amount of noise around him. You know, we've had the Valbuena case. We've had all sorts of other off-the-field issues about the fact that he wasn't the French national team. There's all of these things. And yet, curiously, he's been sort of media shy. And he's been kind of quiet. And he hasn't really felt like a kind of a figure that takes our attention until suddenly he won the Ballon d'Or, admitting there was quite a lot of campaigning going on around that. And now he's gone. And it feels slightly strange, actually. At least it does to me. Maybe, you know, that's an interpretive view from my point of view. You know, it might be that others see him and feel very differently about him. But that's kind of the way I felt about him. He wasn't always that demonstrative for an extraordinarily brilliant player, I felt.
Yeah. You don't have Instagram, do you, Sid?
I don't. Is that where I should be? Because would that change my mind on all of this?
Well, he's quite...
It would, wouldn't it?
Well, he's, I think he's quite active on Instagram and... demonstrative in other ways, but yeah, no, I mean,
we were saying this before we come on air, that this idea that he sort of doesn't call attention to himself, that he doesn't grab the spotlight, and then he'll go and do a very stylized video of him driving around Miami in an extremely fast car and sort of being a rapper or sort of projecting himself as a rapper, and it's weird because the two things don't actually always fit together to me.
Yeah, not really, but there we go. It's funny because we've said this before, but I don't know if we should be worried, or at least it's something for discussion, that a player who is the current Ballon d'Or winner, who at the start of next season would be first choice striker for Real Madrid, the most successful team in European history, and this kind of player is moving to Saudi Arabia. We're not talking... I mean, okay, he's 35. He's coming off the back of a season where he's had injuries, but he's still scored 31 goals. He might not be at his peak, but he's not far off. And yet that kind of player is going to Saudi Arabia. Is that a warning to us?
Yeah, I think it probably is. And I haven't had the time, so apologies for this, to read it properly. But literally on the way back from the airport, I was looking at these reports about the construction of four Saudi clubs becoming private enterprises. Yes. With investment funds behind them, which I don't know if it's a way... I've not read it well enough to have understood it. I literally had a glance at it on the way here. But that suggests that there's an attempt to this is a conscious attempt at national level to try and create a handful of really, really strong clubs. Now, is this something to be worried about? Well, on the face of it, you say, well, this is a kind of a semi-retirement. But it's... you're right. I think it's a really important point, what you're saying. Yes, it's for a player who's 35. And in truth... it's for a player who I think at some intuitive level, it'd be very interesting to see if he actually says this, knows that the decline is coming. Or maybe doesn't know that it's coming, fears it might be coming.
Well, I mean, it is coming. It's coming for
it
a
is coming
soon, the decline,
because he's 35. But I think we've seen it this year, haven't we? We haven't seen a great season from Benzema. He still scored quite a lot of goals. We've still seen some occasionally very good performances. But the injuries and the problems he's had and the recurrence of what appeared to be small injuries, that's when you know there's a big problem. The problem isn't when there's a really big injury. It's a problem when there's a recurrence of small injuries and that rehabilitation doesn't happen the way it should. That's when you start to get concerned. So now, on one level, you say, OK, well, this fits that idea of a pattern of this being a kind of a semi-retirement. And these are players who are coming to the end, so they see this as a way out. And, you know, Sergio Busquets saying that one of the reasons why he wants to stop now and leave Europe is because he wants a change of pace. He wants to take the pressure off. There's, you know, it's been 15 years in the first team. In Benzema's case, he came to Real Madrid, it was 2009, I think, wasn't it? You know, it's a long time to be in the first team every game, apart from the first sort of season and a half when there was a little bit of doubt between him and Higuain. But every game, basically, for 14 years. And so there is a degree of, okay, this is the retirement thing, so it doesn't worry us. But you're right, this is still the guy who currently has the Ballon d'Or. And we suspect that three or four others will go as well. And then, of course, what happens is the question is, does this have a sufficient stability and financial muscle that age at which people go there starts to creep down? And it starts to creep down, and of course the level creeps up. And then bit by bit, there's no real... This may not please people to hear this. In fact, I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people who would be very unhappy to hear this. There isn't really a reason, from a professional point of view, why the Premier League needs to be the biggest league in the world. Right now, it's the financially the richest. It's the most watched. Yes, there is a degree of identification with the clubs, which is huge. Yes, there is. And those are good reasons. But the kind of why is it bigger than, say, Italy or Spain or Germany at the moment? Well, it's essentially because of the capacity to generate this interest, to get people watching, to bring some of the better players in, but not all of them, in truth. And I think the Premier League does have something a bit extra. But actually, if we were in a scenario in which a Saudi league could, because the money and because the rewards are so great, you know, I don't want to follow the figures because I just have no idea if they're true. But when you hear figures like, well, this is worth 400 million euros to Benzema, in a way, it's a total no-brainer.
200 million, I think. I think it's 200. I think it's
one, it 200? Okay.
I think it's 100 each season. Yeah, not 200 each
right.
season.
Yeah, then these are extraordinary amounts of money. Now, admittedly, if you're at Real Madrid and you're earning 30 or 40 million a year, you're on extraordinary money anyway. You don't really need that. But, you know, it's natural, I think, that creates a, if you like, a momentum. And at some point, who knows, maybe this does become a place that, you know, enough good players go that more good players go, and then the level rises. And then this idea that you're taking a step down doesn't feel quite so clear cut. Should it worry us? I mean, it should, if only because we'd quite like to see these players play out their careers in Spain where we're watching them. I mean, that's the selfish view.
Yes,
there are all sorts of other questions. Of course, there are other questions wrapped up in it. But yeah, it would be concerning. You know, we come at it from a Spanish perspective. It would be concerning, I think, yes.
Speaking of questions, I'm sure people have plenty of questions about Karim Benzema, about the other departures from Real Madrid. Asensio, Hazard, Mariano have all left officially, and Ceballos and Nacho's futures are uncertain. If you have questions about those subjects, send us a question and we'll answer it on tomorrow's Q&A pod.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
This episode of the Spanish Football Podcast is sponsored by Beer 52, who this summer are offering you a free case of 8 delicious craft beers. Simply go to www.beer52.com/Spain and just cover the £5.95 postage to receive your free case now.
Sydney, how gutted are you that the football season has come to an end?
As you know, Phil, I am incredibly gutted. I'm not sure what to do with myself now.
Well, Sydney, I've got great news that may soften the blow. To start off the summer break, Beer 52 are offering you and our listeners a case of free, new and exclusive beers from Spain.
Free beer? Surely not. And from Spain as well. They clearly know the way to our listeners' hearts. Tell me more.
So, their industry experts curate a new case every month showcasing the very best craft beer and independent breweries from around the world. Included this month is the Oso Brew Company's Fiesta, which is a balanced, refreshing and super drinkable pale ale. The hops bring big citrus and tropical fruit aromas, while the broad malt base brings a full body and rich mouth feel. Potentially one of the best things to come out of Spain since Pep.
Amazing. But I do also like to have a few snacks with my beers. Can they help me out with that as well?
Yeah, so do I, Sydney. And they certainly can. They come with a couple of tasty snacks, as well as the award-winning Ferment magazine, which talks about Spanish brewing.
Sign me up. How do I do it?
So you can get your free case of delicious craft beers from our friends at Beer 52 by simply going to www.beer52.com/Spain and just covering the £5.95 postage to receive your free case now. That's www.beer52.com/Spain. If after that you're unsatisfied, you can simply pause or cancel at any time.
There's only one thing to say to that. Salut!
I do want to move on because I want to get to the relegation battle. And you chose to go to Balaidos in the end. You thought the story would be in Vigo with Celta hosting Barcelona. That wasn't really the story in the end, although I'm actually quite pleased because you went there and you experienced a really quite extraordinary atmosphere and an extraordinary evening of football and communion between the fans and the players. So in the end, you got to see that. It wasn't necessarily the most dramatic finale to the season for Celta, because in the end they ended to winning the game. But there was a pretty special air at Balaidos, or so it looked like anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And from that point of view, to coin a cliche, no regrets. No regrets at all about going to Vigo. It did feel like a very, very special occasion. The number of people outside pre-game was extraordinary. The noise was fantastic. They opened that stand that hasn't been open all year for the first time. They were selling tickets to season ticket holders to give to friends for only €5. So they absolutely packed out that 6,200 seats that they hadn't had all season. I quite like that. Did you see the reason why it hadn't been open previously? It's actually been done for a few weeks, that stand, but they didn't want to open it because it's a municipal ground and they didn't want the mayor of the town to basically have, if you like, the political power of going, look, I've opened this lovely thing. So they said, we won't do this until after the elections. Obviously, they were fortunate enough the elections were last week. And so then they could have it open in time for this game. That was part of the atmosphere, this sense of something building, of them being important, which was one of the reasons why I went. Because as we were talking about this, I was saying, in a way, and forgive me for saying this, Valladolid fans or Almeria fans, if Valladolid go down or Almeria go down, having just come up, it doesn't feel particularly significant. If Celta go down, and not just because of Gary and Barry, but those two as well, after a decade in the First Division, it would feel like a really big deal. The size of their fan base, which admittedly, you know, we're talking about a relatively small city. We're talking about a stadium. I think it's a 24,000 in total. So it's not massively bigger than for example, than Almeria. And I'm not even sure if it is bigger than Valladolid. I think probably Valladolid is slightly bigger. But it felt like that would be a bigger thing. The other thing, of course, is that because of the nature of this final day and six teams going into it knowing they could go down, we knew that although in theory fate was in everyone's own hands, well, in theory, in practice, fate was in everyone's own hands. You win, you survive. End of story. We knew that the likelihood is it would involve some combinations. Right, so for example, fate was in Valladolid and Getafe's fans, well, in Valladolid's case, because if they won, well, they didn't. They got a draw. Now, a draw was enough for Getafe, so in that sense, it had been in their hands. But Valencia, for example, for a lot of the game, weren't doing what they needed to do. Almeria weren't doing what they needed to do. Celta, in the first 40 minutes or so, I thought there was a chance, watching it, the nervousness, that they were going to get beaten heavily by Barcelona. Not just beaten, but really quite comfortably beaten.
Frank Kessier scored early on, and it was ruled out for a millimetric offside decision. And it felt like the whole stadium just went completely silent when he scored.
It was, honestly, it was exactly like that. I know there is something sort of a little bit simplistic and maybe slightly cliched of sort of expressing this idea of silence falling. But I don't think I've been in a ground for quite a long time. I'm trying to think of an example. There must be some, but I can't off the top of my head think of one where the sense of silence falling, like a shutter, boom, like that, was extraordinary. The whole place just went, shit. And it took about a minute and a half for that goal to be ruled out. For a minute and a half, and I am counting this. I mean, people will say, strictly speaking, no, because the goal isn't given until it's given. But it had been given. For a minute and a half, they are in the relegation zone. For a minute and a half, they are, because three teams ended up in the relegation zone on the final day, and Celta were one of them for that minute and a half. They then continue to have Barcelona dominate possession. Frank Kessié misses an extraordinarily easy header at the far post.
Yes.
Like, it's a really, really, really bad miss. And at that point, you're thinking, poof, Celta are getting away with this here. And so the sense of occasion, I think meant I was pleased for it. The other thing is, of course, bear in mind that we were talking about this, weren't we? Would it be Valladolid against Getafe or the Celta game? We didn't even contemplate the possibility that Espanyol would do that to Almeria, and that Almeria would be the team who would find themselves in that kind of trouble.
It was a thrilling game at Cornellà, which Almeria they took an early lead, but then they found themselves trailing 2-1. Then they got it back to 2-2. Then they were 3-2 down. And then this penalty, which was given in the 87th minute, initially Ramazani was booked for diving. And then there was a VAR check and the referee went and saw and there was contact and the penalty was given. And it was dispatched by Adrien Barba, who stepped up and showed that he had pretty big self-confidence.
Guts.
Big guts to.
Shall I give you the numbers? You know, I love the numbers.
You do.
I'll give you the timing numbers. So Ramazani goes down on 82:44. It takes more than a minute for the referee to even be persuaded to go and look at the screen. He spends about half a minute looking at the screen, which isn't long in fairness. Comes away at 84:28 and points at the spot. It takes until 86:52. So basically more than 4 minutes have gone for Mbaba to take it. Some of that time is spent with Ramazani saying to Mbaba that he wants it. With then Ramazani getting in a confrontation with some of the Espanyol players, with a card coming out, I think, for Ramazani, but I'm not sure. It's just kind of flashing the direction of a little crowd. And you've got Mbaba standing there with a ball in his hand at this point, watching time go by and the pressure growing. And you think, my God, because you've said that there, you know, someone with big nerves, big balls, you know, the kind of the courage to take this on. But it's made worse by the fact that time is going. Now, I only discovered this right at the end of writing today, and I sort of wish I'd known it sooner because it was a lovely way of framing this. There's a member of the coaching staff at Almeria who, when Mbaba is finally standing on the spot, decides he can't bear it. He knows that they've got a really bad record from the spot. He goes down the tunnel because he doesn't want to watch. So the moment his team basically saves themselves, he doesn't see it happen because he's so terrified. And
I think
they would have been a
lot of Almeria fans who didn't watch that penalty. I mean, there was
I don't know how many members of staff there would have been. And it took me a while to click on this as well, but they focused two or three times on the same fan in the stands. And then it was
Lucia
Villalon. Yeah, exactly. It occurred to me. It took me a long time. I was like, that face looks really familiar. And then I realised it was actually the wife of Gonzalo Meledo, the Almeria midfielder. And she went through the whole range of emotions, didn't she? There was one point where you could see in the way that she responded that it was like she would, because there was some alongside her, it was like she was sort of saying to her, I just actually can't take this anymore.
Yes.
I don't want this anymore. Please, yes. just stop it.
Yes. I used to work with her at Real Madrid TV, and it was quite funny seeing her pop up and think, oh, there's Lucia, and then obviously she's Gonzalo Melero's wife.
Yeah.
In floods of tears, like many Almeria fans, I'm sure, were at them staying up. Valladolid going down 0-0 at home to Getafe in a game where they did not manage a shot on target. There's only one shot on target in the whole game. It was from Jaime Mata of Getafe. I don't know, man. I think people in Valladolid were pretty damning of the team's effort yesterday. They went down without a whimper. And if you give it your all and then you come up short, then fine. But yesterday, it just felt that Valladolid just didn't go out and give it their all. And I think that's what's most disappointing for Valladolid fans.
Yeah, I think, let me take you to what I at least, you know, this is obviously from the fact that I am in Vigo. But I think it's a nice way of kind of framing it. Speaking to Renato Tapia after the game, and I said to him, look, how aware are you of what's going on in the other games? Because obviously in this scenario where in practice, you've got six teams and you're saying to them, if you win, you survive. Ignore everything else. If you win, if you survive. And he said, every player you ask, I quite like the honesty post-game, he said, every player you ask will say, no, we're just focusing on our game. He said, that's bullshit. He was speaking in English, by the way. He said, that is bullshit. He said, of course you're watching it. And then Iago Aspas admitted that he was watching on a phone on the bench in the first half.
Who?
He said when he got to halftime, he couldn't take... Iago Aspas, Barry
Who?
Aspas. Barry was saying he was on the bench watching it in the first half on a phone, watching presumably he was watching multi-goal. And he said at halftime he couldn't take it anymore, so he left the phone in the dressing room. And also because Celta were winning, so at that point maybe it is taken away from you. Anyway, the reason I raise this now, because obviously I've taken you back to Vigo when we're actually talking about Valladolid, is I just wonder if Valladolid's approach might have been different if they hadn't been in that position where they thought that someone else was going to do it for them. Because if you look at the...
Okay, but, you know, Come on, you can't.
No, no, I'm not saying it's an excuse. No, no, I'm not saying an excuse. I'm saying, is this part of the problem? Mm. Is part of the problem allowing yourself to be drawn into that? Because if you look at the numbers, obviously, and I did work this out earlier, as again, I love doing the timings. Almeria were in the relegation zone, I think, for 24 minutes, two little spells, one of sort of 8 minutes and one of 14 or 16 or something like that, roughly. But they would have known that, and everybody knows that. And I just wonder if that's not the excuse, but it takes some of the urgency out of it. And I agree with you. I felt that you're up against a team like Getafe who are really difficult to break down. A team like Getafe who try and make it so that nothing happens in the game. And this is particularly noticeable if you watch and do the numbers, which I did, because again, as we've established, I'm very sad like this. The time added on, 6 minutes were added on. They eventually play 7 minutes and I think 19 seconds. And they actually get a corner, which they're not given the chance to take. Which I personally think is a bit out of order. But, you know, the time is up when it's up, I suppose. But if you watch those 7 minutes and 19 seconds, I counted them. I think it was four goal kicks. All of them took at least 30 seconds. I think it's four players on the floor in those 7 minutes. Well, Basically, nothing happens in those. But what I mean is, and so it
sorry,
can
but
be
I
hard.
Mean, but you said Valladolid had a corner kick, which they didn't have a chance to take that. Just before that, they had a free kick, which the goalkeeper had covered, and they didn't stick
absurd.
The ball in the box. I was screaming at the TV.
It was absurd. Yeah. It was bizarre, wasn't it? I mean, they take it short, and Ramazani kind of runs into a position where you think, okay, they're now, and he seems
Not
to change
Ramazani,
his mind.
Gonzalo Plata.
Sorry, I've got the two teams mixed up. Gonzalo Plata, who actually, by the way, almost scored a goal. The goal to have rescued them would have been outrageous, that curler. But I agree with you. There was this sense, and as I say, I don't know if it's connected to the idea that you're connected to the other games, that they, despite the fact that Getafe are a really difficult team to break down, they are a team that take the momentum out of the game, they are a team that piss you off. But even if it's just through being pissed off, where is the point at which they go, you know what? And they put El Yamik up front, but they put him up front in like the 82nd minute or something. They do it really late. Mm. Where is the point when they say, you know what? Sod this. Mm. We go for it like mad, like absolutely mad, no matter what. And that sort of didn't happen. And I don't want to make this about the construction of the club and all that sort of stuff, because I think that would probably be a bit simplistic. But you look at what they did when they sacked Pacheta. 8 wins, 4 draws, and 15 defeats. That's after 28 games. There's 10 games to go. Without Pacheta, 3 wins, 3 draws, and 5 defeats. Now, it's essentially the same ratio, more or less. It's not a million miles off being basically the same ratio in terms of roughly how many you're winning and how many you're losing. So nothing really improved. Given that Pezzolano, if you look at that, one of those is against Barcelona. And I think we've seen that actually the league can be influenced by when you play teams. Because I don't think Celta beat Barcelona last night if Barcelona are playing for the league title. I don't think Valladolid beat Barcelona as they did, 2 weeks ago, 15 days ago, if Barcelona are playing for the title. And I think we've seen this in one or two other results as well. And I think, did you notice last night, I thought it was very pointed. Ruby said something like, Espanyol played with a dignity that I don't know that other teams had.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very pointed remark.
Mm. It was. Okay, I'm conscious of the fact that I want to move on and squeeze in a quick chat about Osasuna, who finished 7th.
Yes.
What a tremendous season they've had, narrowly beaten in the final of the Copa del Rey by Real Madrid and making their way into Europe for the first time in 16 years. It's been an extraordinary season. And it feels, I mean, the Conference League feels like a good fit for them. I think they'll take it seriously. I think they'll give it a good go. And, you know, it'll be great to see European football at one of the best and noisiest stadiums in Spain. So overall, just, you know, a big tick by Osasuna. What a tremendous job they've done.
I absolutely love the comment from Jagoba Arrasate yesterday, the manager after the game. And he said that when we played the Copa del Rey final against Real Madrid, everyone, now to be fair, he doesn't mean everyone, he means everyone who thought they might have a European chance. Mm. Everyone wanted us to lose to create a 7th place for European football, to give an extra chance for other people to get into Europe with that 7th place. He said, thing is, it turned out we got 7th place. And at that point, none of us really thought that was possible. And I'm really glad that they got it. That having been denied the European place through the Copa del Rey final, they got it. Not just because of that, but also because of everything that Osasuna have stood for in the last few years. They've stood for stability when a manager isn't getting good results. They've stood for building a stadium that works for fans, including things like rail seating so that people can stand. They've got, this year, I think I'm right in saying they've got 9 youth team products in their first team squad this year. They play really exciting football. All right, it's been a bit more defensive this year than in previous seasons, but they're direct, they go for you, they're very honest. They have a manager who I think handles everything that goes with it with a normality that I really admire. I think they are an absolutely massive success story this year. And yeah, I think Arrasate for me
manager of the season.
Yeah. Although Mendilibar and certainly Imanol have put in incredibly strong claims as well.
I think Imanol might be just behind him, but we should also mention what a tremendous job he's done. And Real Sociedad back in the Champions League after a decade absence. I was doing the maths, Sydney, because I was writing a bit about them earlier today. And you mentioned that they've got 9 youth team products in the first team squad, Osasuna. Do you know how many players have come through the youth academy and played for Real Sociedad this season?
I'm going to go for 19.
It's 18. 18 of the 18 of the 27 players that are outfield players that are featured for Real Sociedad.
It's just extraordinary.
And 13 of those, Sid, 13 of those are from the province of Guipúzcoa, which is the smallest province in Spain, and it has produced a ridiculous number of players capable of competing in the top flight. So a shout out to Real Sociedad and what they've achieved.
But not just the players. Not just the players.
Well, the manager as well.
Expand it. Yeah, you've got the manager there. You've got Arteta at Arsenal.
Unai Emery.
You've got Andoni Iraola, Unai Emery, Julen Lopetegui. Arrasate started his coaching badges with the Guipuzcoan Football Federation. So even though he's from the other side of the border, from Bizkaia, he develops as a coach there. It's extraordinary.
It is absolutely
brilliant.
I don't know what's in the water up there, but it's working. So yeah.
Well, Patran, I think, or Chacolí.
Congratulations to Real Sociedad. That's just about all we've got time for. Just before we go, a quick mention of the Segunda. In the promotion playoff first legs, Eibar and Alaves drew 1-1 at Ipurua and Levante won 3-1 at Albacete. The second legs are on Wednesday and Thursday. And congratulations to Barça Femini, who won the UEFA Women's Champions League on Saturday. They came from 2-0 down to beat Wolfsburg 3-2. So massive congratulations to them and everything that they've achieved. That's it for another season of TSFP. Our 10th, Sydney, our 10th season of TSFP has come to an end. It's been long, but it's been enjoyable, and we thank you very much for accompanying us on the ride. If you'd like to continue to listen to our dulcet tones over the summer, maybe by the pool, on the beach, wherever you are this summer, you can do so. patreon.com/TSFP. We'll be producing content over there throughout the summer, and if you don't want that, you want a little break from us, it's okay, we understand. But we'll be back in August for the next season, and we'll see what happens.
Wow.
But if I were you, okay, it's in my interest that you sign up for Patreon. Obvs, cool, we make money off it. You know, cards on the table here. But I think it's going to be a very interesting summer. I think it's going to be a very interesting summer in Spain. So if you are even remotely interested in what's going on here, maybe it might be a good idea to sign up to Patreon, because I think we're going to have a lot to talk about. Anyway, thanks very much, amigos, for the support, and we'll speak soon. Adios.
Cheerio.